Translation. A sober, self-realized person who has full knowledge should merge the various parts of the body in their original sources. The holes in the body are caused by the sky. The process of breathing is caused by the air. The heat of the body is caused by fire and semen. Blood and mucus are caused by water. The hard substances like skin, muscle, and bone are caused by earth. In this way, all the constituents of the body are caused by various elements, and they should be merged again into those elements. Responsibly. Do we always respond to the English? Is that usually, yeah. I always wonder sometimes. The sober self-realized person who has full knowledge should merge the various parts of the body into their original sources. The holes in the body are caused by the sky. The process of breathing is caused by the air. The heat of the body is caused by fire and semen. Blood and mucus are caused by water. The hard substances, like skin, muscle, and bone, are caused by earth. In this way, all the constituents of the body are caused by various elements, and they should be merged again into those elements. Purport. To be self-realized, one must understand the original source of the various elements of the body. The body is a combination of skin, bone, mucus, blood, semen, urine, stool, heat, breath, and so on, which all come from earth, water, fire, air, and sky. One must be well conversant with the sources of all the bodily constituents. Then one becomes a self-realized person, or Atmavan. One who knows the self. Om Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namne Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Desha Tarne Vancha Kalpa Chubhista Kripa Sindhubhyevcha Patitam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavabhyo Namo Namaha. Sometimes this Srila Prabhupada talks about this Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya means to count. Sankhya, to count. And Sankhya philosophy is the philosophy of analyzing. Actually, the word analyze means to loosen up. To loosen up. It's a bit like if you've got in this material world where we're and knotted with this material world. There's lots of knots of our karma. And when you get a bunch of strings and lots of knots, you have to kind of loosen it up, right? If you try and tighten it, the knots get worse, right? And you have to try and sort of, sometimes you just go like that, right? When your Brahman thread gets untangled up, right? You sort of go like that in the hope that you can somehow get it out. So this word analysis is how to loosen up things so we can see what's what and we can get disentangled from this material world. And the first point that I notice with this is that we often think this is very primitive, these different elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Of course, these in the Middle Ages, the four of the elements, at least the first four, not the sky, were mentioned as the elements. And we tend to think those are backwards. Of course, in Chinese medicine and Chinese philosophy, we also have wood as well and metal. And we tend to think these are backwards, and we tend to sort of, in the West, we do appreciate these things, but from a sort of lofty intellectual or academic platform, sort of looking down our noses at them, right? So though we say we accept these things and we study them, often it's from a certain position, I would suggest, of pride, and we have this idea that we're all evolving and therefore they're all backwards. Of course, one point I make quite often is if we are actually doing experiments, we should look at life itself that's part of the experiment. And we need to ask some hard questions whether we are actually becoming happier, whether we are actually evolving. Sometimes we forget to even think about the happiness factor. We look at other things. I think I told you last time I came across this quote which said that life is not made of atoms, life is made up of stories. A nice quote. Life is not made up of atoms, life is made of stories. I liked it when I first saw it because then I analysed it. Many times I like things and then you can kind of intellect, you know, sort of hits the heart, but then afterwards you can intellectually analyse. I find that with songs as well. Sometimes you hear a song and it just sounds nice, but then when you hear the words, don't even, you know, sort of think, I like that song, and then a few years later you sort of get the lyrics or something and you think, oh, it also fits logically as well. So, I like that because stories is about what's happening to us. It's how we perceive what's out there. Atoms are just atoms, you know, without anyone to see them or feel them or touch them or anything like that. What are they? And that's so impersonal, so impersonal. So nothing has any real meaning. And this is part of Sankhya philosophy. Nothing has any meaning unless it's perceived. You know, nothing has any value unless you see how does it affect the person, how does it affect the consciousness. Otherwise, what's the use of just looking at things out there? It becomes pointless. So that's the point, is we need to take feedback from life, and that's the process, is we need to take feedback. Life is always giving us feedback, and that's what a real philosopher does. A real philosopher is always flexible, taking back what's going on in life. Am I going in the wrong direction? We talk that in machines, you have feedback, in electronics, you have feedback. If you're on a course, you get feedback. Am I in the right direction? Are the signs, you know, when you're going on a journey, if you're in a ship or something, is that lighthouse there? Am I seeing the right things? Am I getting what I need? So it's a constant process all the time. And of course, we have the option to take that feedback, and of course, we have to do that in our lives as well. In ISKCON Education Services, we sort of have a rule that anyone who's employed in ISKCON Education Service must be able to take feedback. Right? We're on a learning process, all of us, everyone, me included, right? We all have to take feedback because we're all evolving, we're all learning, we're on a journey. We're in education, and education is a journey. Now, the other option, of course, is to never take feedback. And we find that's probably going on in many of the Arab countries at the moment. People are giving feedback in, you know, quite strong ways that we don't like you. We don't want you anymore. Your power's up. But they're trying to obliterate the feedback in Syria now. They're just attacking the people, saying we don't want your feedback. We want to stick to our delusions of grandeur, just like Hitler. He kept on fighting to the very end, right? It's a madman. A madman will fight to the very end, and he'll still be screaming, "I'll take some of you bees with me." You know, you're all wrong. To the very end, hanging on to those delusions of grandeur. But it's madness. It's madness. Ishwaraham aham bhogi. I'm the controller, and I'm the enjoyer of this world. Is actually madness. And what do we do in this material world? What's the illusion? The illusion is Maya. Maya denies us the reality. Because the only way I can become great, I'm tiny, but the only way I can become great, well, I can become great by admitting I'm small, but that's devotional service. That's the irony, right? If we actually admit our position, we become great, right? We can become greater than Krishna, right? Krishna, you know, Krishna became the chariot driver of Arjuna. We can become great, but in the material world, we become great by destroying what's bigger than us. And that's the material mentality. We always put down who's greater than us. I was having a bit of fun this morning. I just wrote a few things out. But some countries, they killed the intellectuals, right? So then all the sutras can become intelligent. You know, Mao Zedong and his little red book, right? And in Cambodia, they killed so many of the doctors and the intellectuals, just practically obliterated them, right? So I can look good. And we killed the bourgeoisie so we can appear to be rich, right? We can even put down Hindus so I appear transcendental. Huh? Huh? Instead of transcending, we sometimes push. We deny we cover up to make ourselves look better. That's, you know, we put other people down. We sit here, and I could sit and say how bad the material is, and then have a big smile on my face and feel very good about myself. But it doesn't work. It doesn't work. You might feel good for yourself for a couple of seconds, right? But in the long run, does it actually work? We can put down materialists, as I say, to become spiritual. Even sometimes men put down women thinking they're going to become more of a man. If I destroy the feminine, I'll become more of a man. A very British trait that sociologists have studied, right? Put down the feminine, and I become more of a man. Where many times, my experience is when I was in India, I was actually at one point, I was getting a bit brittle because I was sort of looking after my wife, I was looking after other people who were sick, and we were travelling around India. And at one point I thought, actually, I'm terrified of India. It's terrifying. Yeah? All these things attacking you, you know, senses are being assaulted. And from that moment I found my courage. I found my courage. And sometimes when we accept something, we accept our weakness, we find our strength, right? But we put the other thing down, we don't actually get our strength. So, that's the material process often, is trying to put other, sometimes we even think not overcome my doubts, but if I just deny my doubts, I become a faithful person, right? It's another thing we do. I don't look at my doubts, I think I'll become a faithful person. We have to face our doubts, we have to overcome our doubts. All of these things, we have to understand them, we have to integrate them within our life. They're a part of life. We have to go beyond them, not deny them. So, life is always trying to teach us. Life is always screaming at us to change. Screaming at us, pushing at us. And we're not actually civilized. We have this idea that this earth, air, fire and water is, these elements are backwards. When I was in India, I was in Chennai, and we went to... mainly we're going around temples, but my wife wanted to see the museum. It's my excuse. I also probably wanted to go as well. We went to a museum, and there it was in the museum was a little children's playground, of all places. And there, in the corner of the playground, there was Mendelssohn's table of the 92 elements. In the West, we said there's 92 naturally occurring elements. Right? And then there's the man-made ones as well. And there it was in the playground, and I thought, there's a bit of brainwashing going on, a bit of colonialism going on. But we do, we tend to think, and when I joined the movement, certainly I was a scientist, I was sort of having a little magazine come through the, as well as the Beano and Dandy, I was having other things come through the letterbox on Tuesday morning or something. It was a little magazine called Understanding Science. And I used to get up in the morning and read through it and read about, I remember, steam engines and how we made steam and we're now civilized, and we used to be on carts and bullock cart rides, or maybe horses and carts, and now we're civilized having trains and buses and things like that. And then I got onto nuclear atomic physics and how we got into the atom, and I thought it was very colorful, very attractive as well. And I found a lot of shelter. So when I came to the movement, it was a big challenge. It was actually a big challenge. This looks like primitive earth, air, fire, water. I had to really look at it. And it was a very, because it's an ongoing thing now, but it was a very, very painful process trying to, look at this and see, I have my doubts. Can earth, water, fire, and ether be really civilized, right? Haven't we got it all sussed? And of course, then I began to realize, just even now, the brainwashing of history. I can still remember clearly sitting, we had some books, I can still remember those books about history. And I can still remember pictures of the Iron Age and the Bronze Age, and Stone Age people, right? And I can still remember pictures of the Romans, what really strikes in my mind is pictures of modern day. This was the sort of 60s, of trains and cars and jet planes. And this was it, This was, you've arrived, son, But thinking back, I read it somewhere. If you're a fish, a goldfish, all you know is the water and what's round you, right? That's all you know. And that's what it's like. We're born into this world with nothing. We just don't know anything. I think I told you that, I'll repeat it, it was about 4 years ago, I went and took a little nap downstairs in the basement. And I got fed up when I was in that basement of sort of having to switch off the lights because it has the ventilation I put in and everything. So I got fed up of switching all the switches off. So I just put one switch outside, the master switch, so you could just switch everything off. So I went in there one day, and when you go in the back of the basement where we store our stuff now, if you put the lights out, it's completely dark. There's nothing. So what happened was I had the lights on, and I just fell asleep in the afternoon. I don't like sleeping. They say you shouldn't sleep between 4 and 7. I don't know if you know that. Between Ayurveda, you shouldn't sleep between 4 and 7 in the afternoon. We won't go into shouldn't sleep in class, but you shouldn't sleep that time. And if you've ever done it, I don't know if you've done it, but I've experienced it. I feel really weird, really strange. You know, if I sleep between 4 and 7 in the evening, and then I sort of get up, I sort of, you know, I feel like I need some Largactyl or something like that. I feel really strange in the head. It's very dreamy, right? But a little nap sometimes okay, maybe just a few minutes. I don't know if you find that sometimes a nap just gives you that energy, but if you sleep too much, you feel rotten, right? And so I just went down there, and I must have fallen asleep. Now, while I was asleep, someone must have turned that master switch off, because I woke up. I didn't even know I'd woken up. All I knew was, it's dark. That's all I knew. You know, it's dark. I couldn't see anything. I got a few thoughts. Am I in space? I really thought, have I died? I was actually, you know, and it probably was just a few seconds, but it seemed like, you know how they say if you have an accident or something? Someone told me the other day an accident and they fell over and it's like, you know, it sort of like went in slow motion, like it does on the film, you know, right? So it probably was just, but it seemed like minutes. I was thinking, where am I, right? But the experience wasn't intellectual. It was just like, right? It was like being a child. It was so, you know, primal, and you know, not, it wasn't up in the head. And then I was grasping, and then I felt the mattress, the sort of, I actually built it myself, the cushion under me, which I made myself, and I felt it, and I recognized it, and then I suddenly realized where I was. But very, very scary. Yeah, yeah, Lord Brahma is one in the universe, right? Where am I? Right. So it was very, very... So, you know, we're born like that. We're born like that. We actually wake up. I sometimes actually, when I first came to the womb, I used to have difficulty sleeping, and I sometimes wonder whether it's going back to the womb, you know, or birth or something. I get terrified sometimes when I'm falling off to sleep, you know. So sometimes those things are very, very strong in us. But somehow, from that blank, you know, that blank sort of just primal experience of being born, then we're completely dependent on our parents, our teachers. And we've been given all this history, this advertising, the newspapers, we know what they're like, our education, anthropology. Anthropology is the whole science of how we all evolved and everything. It's not so bad as it was, but it used to be very, very colonial and down on primitive societies, geography, sociology. When I was a kid, you know, it was about looking at the earth and seeing all the red bits, right? Right? Because all the countries that were red was the empire, right? I used to look at it and think, wow, so much of it is red, right? And of course, we used to read about India and, you know, all that stuff and how Victoria was, I mean, Empress of India. Wow, you know, we felt very mighty. So, but actually, when you think about it, it's pretty difficult to understand history. Can you ever understand history? Can you ever really? I mean, can you ever know what was going on? Again, not just the atoms, but what people were experiencing. Very, very. Even if you get a story, actually, or writing, still to really imbibe what they were actually. Very difficult. Very difficult. Someone once gave an example, just like a few years ago, we had a break-in upstairs. Actually, it wasn't a break-in, it was an inside job. I think the Sankirtan man decided he wanted to get married or something, needed a bit more dosh. So window was broken in the Sankirtan office. It was the, what do you call it, EDC office now? And I think that, but it actually, the police came and they ascertained that actually it was an inside job. You could tell that the window hadn't been smashed from the outside. It had been done from the inside somehow, right? So, you know, we won't go, you're probably all thinking, who was it? But don't worry, they're not here anymore. But the point is, I was thinking about that. How can you, you know, you might, even a good CID guy, detective, might be able to work out something, but are you ever sure what happened? Are you ever sure what happened? You know, you can piece together a few things, but how can you actually know what happened? Even when we get a CCTV, we can't tell what happened sometimes because it's lousy CCTV. But how can you ever really put it together? You're not really ever sure, and that's the process with the problem with just looking back at history and trying to analyze. You haven't got much idea at all. Very difficult to piece together from just a few scraps of evidence, you see. So that's the problem. So actually, these Shishi Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshmanan Ki. Actually, do we even know what happened in India? Right? I mean, when you think about it, the British going to India was, they were sort of face to face with a nemesis, right? Right? You know, they're actually facing the original culture that proposed truth, right, rather than illusion. So, actually, these elements. One point is these elements aren't real. There's many points here, but these elements aren't really elements that we have in the West. You know, we have iron and calcium and blah, 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 right? And we learn their elements. In a limited sense, they are, because chemically, they can't be broken down. An element means something that's rudimentary. It can't be broken down to anything smaller parts, right? But you can break down. When you get to nuclear physics, you can break them down, right? You can break them down into their atoms. So in one sense, they're not actually elements. Elements means something that's got something that's unique, that doesn't exist anywhere, and it can't be broke down. So earth, air, fire, and water, and sky are not actually primitive concepts. It's a very, very evolved concept. And the difference is, I'm not an expert on this, but I've thought about it, is that they're always in relation to experience. So that's why we say that when you've got space, which is an element, which we're running out of in the manner, we know about that, right? We haven't got much space in the manner. Ether, or space, in that is sound, right? And then we say that air has got touch as well. You can feel air, right? We say that you've got fire has got sight. You can see it. You can't see the air. Water has got taste. You can't taste water. And then earth, it reacts with all the elements because you've got smell as well within the earth. So they sound primitive to people, but actually, they're to do with us and how the world reacts. It's holistic. It's not science is reduction. It's just it's things. It's impersonal things out there. How do they work? You see. So in one sense, it's more elementary. These are not actually elements. The 92 elements, because they can be broken down. Actually, it's interesting. Even the word primitive, I looked it up this morning because it means. Primus means, you know, you're the first thing, the original thing. So even when we use the word primitive in the West, we've put our, you know, evolutionary concept on it because it's a bad word. But why is the first thing bad? It's only bad if you think we all were wild savages and now we're going to go and make them civilized, right? We've even got that word primitive and sort of put a spin on it. Primitive means, you know, the original. It means actually, and the word rudimentary, it's interesting. We say that the word rude comes from that. I say, how rude. Very British, isn't it? Oh, they're so rude, these Indian people, you know what I mean? They're always honking their horns when they're driving. They don't say please and thank you. But actually, rude, it means unwrought, unworked on. Unworked on. You know, you have wrought iron when you bend iron. It's unworked on. What's wrong with that in one sense? I was thinking about it. What's wrong with the first thing? The first thing was good, according to us. The original was Krishna. Of course, I was thinking we do have to have culture. We don't want to be rude. because the word is asat in Sanskrit. Prabhupada translates asat. We don't want to be uncultured people. We have to make our children cultured. But at the same time, you can see there's so many slants on our history, on our education, that I think need looking at. And that's why Srila Prabhupada says there's two kinds of people. Isn't Bhagavad Gita says that? There's the introspective sage, and there's the people that look out to make things better. And that's the real difference. A real philosopher is the one that says, I have to change. The whole of science, and we could go on to this for hours and hours, but the whole of science and the modern way of looking at life is that I have to make a difference by manipulating everything out there. Ishwaraham, I'm the controller. And our process is to be introspective, reflective. Not that we don't manipulate, not that we're not in control, but we're always aware that there's a greater control. I always think about this. Is we often sort of put Krishna so much there that we put ourselves out of the picture. But we also are a controller. We also have so many things that Krishna has, and Prabhupada again says that we can learn about God by looking at ourselves. He says we can learn about God by studying ourselves. He says the difference is between the controlled and the controller. The difference is it's a relationship of the small and the great, the servant and the master. But still, we do have some control. But we cannot think we're completely in control. I think the most quoted verse of Srila Prabhupada is that one, Mayajakshena Prakriti Suyate Satyaracharam. This material world is under my control. It's quite amazing. And then Prakriti Kriyamanani Gunaikam. It's amazing how we think we're in control. All we can do is we can somehow, if I want to fly, then I've got to build an aeroplane. Right? Now, when I build an aeroplane, there's millions of laws. Aerodynamics, I knew people who studied the aerodynamics and stuff like that, and aeronautics and all this engineering and stuff in university. And it's so complicated. Practically speaking, if one little thing goes with a plane, that can be a disaster. How many millions of different laws do you have to apply? Right? There's all the laws about the strength of the steel, and the laws about how the air flows. There's laws about pressure, Boyle's law and all that, when you're in the airplane so you can breathe, because you just get a hole in the fuselage. Right? It's not much fun. Right? So many laws. Millions and millions of laws. And so what we do is we try and get everything right, and get that right, and get that right. And if we get it all right, we can fly. But you kind of get the feeling, you've got to get it all right. It's like, we're still completely controlled. See what I'm saying? We somehow think that we can just, and temporarily we overcome some law. What's the law we temporarily overcome? Well, we can go, 750 miles an hour. I think we got to 750 miles an hour when we're going to India. You look at some of the show the speed of the plane, and you're watching that little thing, you can look at the speed, right, and where you are. So temporarily, for a little bit, you can suddenly go fast. But you have to get all those laws. For a little bit, you can go on a cruise liner. But look what happens when a big cruise liner, when the guy makes a mistake. Not only did people lose their lives, but it was also 354 million quid lying on its side in water. Because there's a law, if you get a hole in a boat, it sinks. Right? I mean, so what happens is we're so foolish, we think we can wangle around those laws, but the laws are still in place. That's the foolish thing. And I don't know if you find that. The more you try and control, the more you become controlled. It's a law of life, right? Everything must be in place, and you sort of have to get that in place. All right. So controlled. So only temporarily can we get some control, and then we lose it again. It's all finished. Castles in the sand slips into this. As Srila Prabhupada says, we're just like children. This science, this 92 elements, not only we... if we make 92 natural elements, we've made about 100 more elements. About 10, I don't know how much 10, I don't know if anyone's a physicist, how much it is now. We've got einsteinium, californium, we've named all these new, we've probably got some more, we'll probably have, blarium or something, I don't know, bushium, name after different people. But they're making all these new elements, right? And they're all dangerous, right? They're all radioactive and kill you, and stay around for 500 million years or something. So how controlled we are. We've got those nuclear reactors in Japan. They're not going to be able to go into those for... It's not going to be safe for hundreds of years. They don't know what to do about it. So what we do is we paint ourselves in a corner, right? When you control too much, you get yourself right into a... You ever notice that in life? When you control too much, you get yourself into a real pickle, right? Just like if you try and become a brahmacharya and you try and control your sex drive by being really heavy, right? What happens? You suddenly decide you need to get married. Sorry, you can't even admit it to your mates, right? Because you've painted yourself into a corner. You've put up an image of yourself, right? I'm in control, right? And suddenly you think, I'm not in control anymore. There's things I can't control, right? Because it's material energy, especially sex drive, is very, very big. And what do we do in the West? We say, oh, it's primitive. So we try and put it down. We put down the emotions. We put down anything basic. But the Vedic culture is not about putting those things down. Shiva is raw. Shiva's raw. Parvati, right? The material energy. Kali. We embrace all those things. It's so sensual, actually, as well. Isn't it amazing? Krishna involves everything, because ultimately the spiritual world is completely sensual. So we don't put things down. We don't overcome by putting down, by pretending we're greater. Everything's integrated. Everything, Krishna consciousness is everything. We just have to add Krishna to everything. And I really believe that Srila Prabhupada wanted us to carry on preaching vigorously against this idea that all other cultures are primitive and we're at the height of civilization. And I think we have to still carry on in an intelligent way fighting against this scientific idea of evolution, because it comes up every day at all points. It keeps people, it's their security. And I mentioned the other time when I mentioned to people, they're scared. They're scared when you try and take it away. They hold on for dear life because it underpins their whole lives. And I think we have to be very vigorous about it in our preaching. And, not only, of course, not just by putting down. As I said, we don't become greater by putting down. We also, of course, have to live it and show that we can live a life that's better. I had a lady come with the school the other day. And of course, we're not preaching directly Krishna conscious. We don't even use that term when we're teaching to children. You know, you have to become Krishna conscious. We don't use those terms. We have to be reflective. If you go to different religions, you'll find they use all kinds of terms that are not. They don't think about. Have you been saved? Have you been bathed in the blood? You know, think about it, mate. What's bathing in blood? I mean, think about it. So we have to think about things, right? But so I had one lady at the end of this presentation. She said, actually it's a Christian school. They were a little shy about coming. She said, this Indian philosophy is amazing. I think everybody should do it. I thought, wow, do you realize what you're saying? You think everyone should do it. So I'm quite aware that, I don't always follow it, but that's what we're trying to do. We have to give that positive alternative. We've got that positive alternative. People will then listen to our doubts and maybe look at the doubts about these scientific theories. We might not be able to convince people overnight, but at least we should start by chipping away and giving some doubts. Right? And when I say doubts, we're not doing it in a just an emotional way. It must be an emotional and a rational way as well. It must be done intelligent with good insight. And because just like that cruise liner, this whole material civilization is going to be scuttled one day. It's going to sink. All right. Any questions, please?